All right, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the top of Daf Yud Amud Aleph. The Mishnah Yod from today's Daf will be familiar to us because we quoted them in yesterday's Daf. So it'll be a little bit of a chazara on what we did yesterday and then explicating on the Mishnah Yod that we quoted yesterday. First Mishnah says, Kol get, sheish alav eid kuti, pasul. Any contract that has a signatory that is a kuti is pasul, chutz, mikitei nashim, vishichurei abadim. With the exception of a bill of divorce and a document of emancipation, maseh sheviu lifnei Rabbi Gamliel lekfar otanai getisha. So there was an incident where they brought a bill of divorce before Rabbi Gamliel and kfar otanai. Veyu edav edei kutim, and both of the signatories were kutim v'yichshir, and he said that it was a fine get. Obviously, there's a problem because you bring in an incident which involves two edim, when the Mishnah only stipulated that there was one aid that is kasher, so the Gemara will deal with that and indicate there was chasurei mechsera, that we're missing some words in the Mishnah that will tell us that Rabbi Gamliel really argues on the Tanakama with regards to the number of edei kutim that are allowed on the get. So the Gemara asks, Mani matnitin, who is the author of our Mishnah? Lo Tanakama, velo Rabbi Lazar, velo Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. So none of the above Tanaim can be the authors of our Mishnah. Gemara is about to bring a Braita, Tosefta from Psachim, that has all of their opinions in it. And we're going to see now that none of them seem to match what is being said in our Mishnah. Detanya, matzat kuti muteret. If a kuti makes matzah, then you're allowed to eat it. V'adam yotzei b'yidei chovato b'pesach. And not only can you eat it, but you're also yotzei with that matzah, the mitzvah of achilat matzah on the first night of Pesach. So there are two aspects to this. The first of which is that we trust him not to make it into chametz, which is what it means it's muteret. Muteret means you can eat it because it's not chametz. We don't suspect that he made it chametz. The second aspect of this is, Adam yotzei b'yidei chovato b'pesach, is that we know that the matzah that is used on the first night of Pesach has to be matzah shmura. Machloket rishonim in the Gemara and Pesachim has exactly what matzah shmura is. Here, both Rashi and Tosafot bring the same reasoning, which is, Vafilu yadinim bad lo chmitza, lo nafik ba elim kain, avada shimur l'shem chuvat matzah. That shmura matzah means that it was made l'shem matzat mitzvah. It was made with the intent to be used for the mitzvah of matzah, as opposed to the alternate view in the Rishonim, which is matzah shmura, means that it was guarded from chametz, all the way from the time shatak tzira. But here, Rashi and Tosfot both bring the view that the shmura here means that it was done with the intent to be used for the mitzvah matzah. So here, the Tanakhama believes in the Braita that kutim are trusted both from the aspect of chametz, that if they make it, it won't be chametz, as well as the aspect of lishma, that they can view it with lishma so that it can be utilized for the mitzvah matzah on the first night of Pesach. Rabbi Elazar Oser, Elazar says, no go, l'fish ein biki'im b'tuktei mitzvot. They don't keep the mitzvot properly. So therefore, we suspect them on both levels, meaning that we don't trust them with regards to the chametz. We also don't trust them with regards to the lishma aspect. Therefore, not only can you eat it on the first night, you can't eat it the entirety of Pesach. Rav Shimon Gamliel omer, kol mitzvah sheichziku ba kutim, harbei medaktakim ba yoter misrael. In mitzvot that the kutim take upon themselves or do observe, there they are far more detailed and careful about the observance of those mitzvot. Based on that, Rabbi Shmuel is indicating that they do keep the mitzvah of matzah, and therefore they will be believed in that area. What exactly is the machlok between Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Tanakhama is not clear over here. The Gemara, in discussing this in Chulin, says that the difference between them is that the Tanakhama believes that kutim only keep mitzvot haktuvot b'Torah. They only keep mitzvot that are explicitly written in the Torah. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel comes to argue and say that is not only true about mitzvot that are written in the Torah, but even mitzvot shechzikuba, mitzvot that they kept, that they observed. Not uniquely true to mitzvot that are explicitly written, but it's also true about mitzvot shechzikubahem. The Rishonim here, you can see this in the Tosafot, well as Rashi, discuss what is the view of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So view of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, af, means also, and that's the way Rashi reads it, af mitzvah shimidivrei sufim enik tuvah b'torah, imikziku basam chin alayu, so it means also. The Tanna Kama says only written mitzvot. Mishim Gamliel says written mitzvot plus mitzvot sheyechziku bam. On the other hand, Tosafot here discusses the possibility that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is in contrast to the Tanna Kama. Tanna Kama believes it's all about what's written in the Torah, and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says there's nothing to do with that, it all has to do with Mashiach Zikuba. And that means that even if it's written in the Torah, that does not automatically mean that they keep the mitzvah. It's only mitzvah Shiachzikubaem. So that's the difference in the Rishonim here as to what the sheet of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is. Is it building on the Tanna Kama, or is it arguing on the Tanna Kama with regards to Ktiva B'Torah? Tosafot asks with regards to the Kuti, isn't there an Gzeira of Pat Kuti? Pat Kuti is a Gzeira separate from Pat Akum. Pat Akum is a Gzeira that you can't buy bread from an Akum. The reasons for that are discussed in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Most of it has to do with a certain amount of social interaction or breaking bread together with these individuals. There was a restriction on Pat Akum. That same type of Gzeira was in place for Pat Kuti. And therefore, his question is, what's going on here with the matzah? How could it be possible that the matzah is okay? What happened to this Gzeira of Pat Kuti? So Tosafot says that there's a difference in the Gzeirot, and that is the Gzeira of Pat Akum is that if the Akum is ofer the bread, then you have a problem. Doesn't matter whose dough it is. Doesn't matter if it's his dough or your dough. If he bakes it, you have a problem. On the other hand, by the Kuti, Pat Kuti is a different Gzeira. The Gzeira there is only if the Kuti bakes his own dough. But if you give him the dough to bake, then there is no restriction of Pat Kuti. So Tosafot says, in this case, it was Yisrael who gave the dough to the Kuti, and now the Kuti is baking the matzah with the Yisrael's dough, and that's how we overcome the problem of Pat Kuti. The alternate answer could be, is that Pat Kuti was a later Gzeira after the Tosefta is written. I mean, that we know that within the Tanaic works, the Kutim go through different stages in terms of their status, and depending on what they thought of them, how early on Tanaic works are written, as well as after the discovery of their temple and their Avodah Zarah up on Har Gerizim, that changed their status completely in the eyes of the Chachamim. So you do have different stages, and maybe the Gzeira of Pat Kuti was a later Gzeira, and that might be the solution to the problem. But then Tosafot runs into a secondary problem, which is something that I discussed many places in the Mishnayot and in Shas, which is that the Kutim do not subscribe to Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mechshol. Because, again, they take the Torah literally, and therefore they think the restriction of Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mechshol means literally don't put a stumbling block in front of a blind person. On the other hand, Chazal darshan that to mean that you're not allowed to cause someone else to do an Aveira. And so if you do something that will trip somebody else up, not literally, but figuratively, there's a restriction. So that means if you make something chametz and then hand it to someone who's restricted in chametz, you're in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mechshol. Tosafot's question is the Kutim who do not subscribe to that, then how can you trust them to make the dough not chametz? If he makes the dough chametz, he has no problem with that. He won't eat chametz, but he'll give you chametz to eat because he doesn't see any restriction in that. He doesn't think there's any isur. So Tosafot says, then how does this work? How can we trust him with regards to chametz if he doesn't feel that there's any imperative to make sure that other people don't sin? So the Gemara answers this way in many places, which is, this was his only dough, he's going to eat from it. If you know that he's going to eat from it, then you can also eat it, because we know they're trustworthy vis-a-vis themselves. They won't sin themselves, but they don't mind letting other people sin because they don't have this Nifnei Iver Lo Titein Mechshol. So if he's willing to eat the matzah on Pesach and it's not chametz, then you can eat the matzah as well, because that's clearly the indication that he believes that it's fine. The person who has to bring the food or the wine to the king, he has to taste it. Or if he drinks it and he tastes it, then it's fine, then the king can eat it. So to over here, if the Kuti eats it, then you know it's okay. That's an indication that it's not chametz. And that's what Tosafot says is this scenario here. Mani, who's the author of our Mishnah? He Tanna Kama, afilu shar shtarot nami. According to the Tanna Kama, once you are believed, you're believed through and through. And if the Eid Kuti is fine, then the Eid Kuti should be fine, not only in Gitei Nashim and Shechorei Abadim, it should be fine in other contracts. I Rabbi Elazar, if we're talking about Rabbi Elazar, afilu get isha nami lo. Then he says that Eid Kuti is no good. They are not trusted. And so then, not only should they not be trusted by shtarot, they should not be trusted by Gitei Nashim and Shechorei Abadim. V'i Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. So then, I the Aksuk, if they take on this mitzvah, they are trusted in this mitzvah, afilu shtar shtarot nami. then all contracts should be fine. Idlo achzok, if they not observe these mitzvot, afilu getisha namilo, then even a getisha they should not be trusted by. So now, we don't have an author based on all the different opinions that we have about kutim. We can't find an author that matches our Mishnah. The Mishnah itself, you could have simply explained, is that fundamentally, an eid kuti is believed. The chachamim were gozer. We don't trust them or we don't believe them. With the exception of gitei nashim and shechri avadim because of igun, which we've seen in many places. That would have been the simplest way to explain the Mishnah. And that's why the brayta was brought over here to show us that that's a nice explanation, because that explanation of the Mishnah doesn't work according to any of the opinions here. Where it says v'chitei mer shimon gamliel hi. So let's say it is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, but achzuk b'ha v'lo achzuk b'ha, that they keep this mitzvah, they don't keep that mitzvah, which means that they're careful about gitei nashim and shechri avadim. They're not so careful about other shtarot, and that would solve your problem. Ihochi ma'ir yachad. Because if you do that, then you run into a problem, which is, then why is only one eid kuti permitted? Afilu trei nami. Then even two eidim should have been fine. I mean, for Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's explanation, it's either a yes or no. If it's yes, then why is it only permissible with one eid kuti? It should be permissible with two eidim kutim. If you think that it's impermissible, then it shouldn't be allowed even with one eid kuti. So this solution to the problem, which says that, oh, maybe they keep gitei nashim shechri avadim and not shtarot, doesn't solve your problem, because the Mishnah talks about one eid, which is a somewhat of an in-between shita. So lama amar Rabbi Elazar lo yakshiru bo ele eid chatri bivad. So then why does Rabbi Elazar say that here, when they said eid kuti, they meant one eid kuti, and that's it. No more. If according to your explanation, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, even two eidim should have been fine. So the Stam Rabbi Elazar in the Mishnah on the Tosefta is Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua the Tana. The Stam Rabbi Elazar, the Amora, is Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, who is a Talmid Chover of Rabbi Yochanan. So now the statement over here by Rabbi Elazar is Rabbi Elazar the Amora commenting on our Mishnah, saying that our Mishnah is limited to one eid. And therefore explaining Rabbi Shimon Gamliel as being the author of our Mishnah, that we're talking about two eidim ketuvim being shevim, is implausible given the statement of Rabbi Elazar. The Gemara further on will ask, what do you need Rabbi Elazar from? It's pretty obvious from the Mishnah that you can only use one eid, and that in itself should have been a raya that you can only use one eid. So that can't be the explanation of Mishnah. Ela, the olam Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar is due after the Mishnah, which is, they are not believed. Kagon, the chotim Yisrael b'sof. But there is a Jewish signature at the bottom. De'i lav kuti chaver havo, lo machtim le mikamei. Had it not been for the fact that the kuti was a chaver, meaning someone who was trustworthy, someone who kept the mitzvot, Israel would not have allowed him to sign before him in the document. Mar says, Iachi afilu shar shtarot nami. If that's the solution to the problem, that solution should work even in other documents. If the Israel signing at the end is indicative of the standing of the aid before him, then that should be a validation, whether you're talking about Gitei Nashim Shechui Avadim, whether you're talking about other shtarot. Ela, Amrinan, Rav Chashavak. By other shtarot, we say that he left the space. He was a humble individual, and he says, you know what? There's probably somebody more important that they're going to put on this document. So when he signed on the second line, not on the first line, leaving space for someone else to sign before him. Shavak demanded Kashishmine, for someone who's older than him, someone that's wiser than him. So then, if that's the case, he doesn't really know who signed before him. So Gemara says, Hachanami, Rav Chashavak, the man de Koshishmine. You could say the same thing by Gitei Nashim, Shechri Avadim, that he just signed on the second line, and then the Kuti came and signed after him on the top line. So his signature being second is no evidence he vetted the first person who signed the document. So now you have a problem, which is, we've seemingly have found the solution to the problem of why one eid Kuti is permitted, is because you have two signatories to the contract, and the lower of the two signatories is a Yisrael. And by him being the lower one, he, in a sense, opines on the first signature as being fine. But the Gemara says, wait a minute, if that's the case, then all shtarot, everything should be fine in that manner. The Gemara says, no, because in those cases, we're afraid that he signed first, but he just signed on the lower of the two open spaces to sign for the eidim. And then the kuti came afterwards and signed on the first line. So that means that he's not saying anything about the first aid. So when I says, well, if that's the case, then why can you permit it by Gitei Nashim and Shechri Avadim? You have the same problem. So Amar Papa Zoto Meret. Here is the conclusion. From this, we understand Eidei Aget in Chutmim Ze Belo Ze. When it comes to Eidei Aget, they have to sign in the presence of each other. They cannot sign the document without the other aid being there. It's my time up. What's the reason for that? Amar Ravashi, Gzeira Mishum Kuchem. Discuss in 1 second. It's a Gzeira because of the situation or the case of Kuchem. So now, what the Gemara concludes here is, yes, it has to do with the order of the signatories on the document, but also has to do with the nature of the document. In regular shtarot, both Eidim do not have to sign at the same time. One aid can say today, one aid can sign tomorrow. They do not have to know each other. Each aid is just testifying as to the veracity of the words, whatever is documented in this contract. And each one can do it independently. That means just because there are two Eidim signed here, doesn't mean that the second aid knows who the first aid was signed. He could sign earlier on the second line, and then the other aid comes and signs on the first line, and the two have nothing to do with each other. On the other hand, by Gitei Nashim and Shechriya Badim, there's a demand that the Eidim be present together, and that they sign together. That means if the aid signed on the second line, by definition he knows who's signing on the first line. And Israel would not allow a kuti, unless he was vetted, and a trustworthy kuti to sign before him on the get. And so that's why if we have Israel after the aid kuti on the document, that's evidence of the fact that he's opining as to the status of this first aid, that he is a kosher aid, and that he is a good kuti, we'll call it, good enough to sign on the document. And that's why the Gdein Hashim and Shechriya Vadim are kshirim in this manner. Ah, so very good. So what you're asking is very interesting. The Bavli does not say what you're asking. The Yerushalmi does say what you're asking. The Yerushalmi says it should be irrelevant which order they sign in, because the demand is that they be there together, so then the order doesn't matter. The Yerushalmi says such a thing. The Bavli, our Gemara, does not say that. And Yerushalmi brings a Deya like our Gemara that it only works when it's the second signature. And that might be the case, because if there's Yisrael and a Kuti there, he may not know anything about the other aid. He may be present with the aid. He's not necessarily opining on the other aid unless he signs second. Because when he signs second, he's indicating that he thinks this other individual is more important than him. If he signs first, and then the Kuti signs second, yes, they were there together, but it doesn't indicate anything from him about the aid Kuti. They were there together, and they both signed. Does he know anything about this aid Kuti? Nothing. He doesn't know anything about the aid Kuti. And therefore he signed first, assuming that he was more important, not opining whatsoever about the Eid Kuti. So the Bavli believes that it's important that the Eid Yisrael be signed second, because that's the only way you can indicate that he's saying something about the Eid Kuti. Even though, again, the Yerushalmi has an opinion, like you're suggesting, that if they sign in either order, that's enough, because the mere fact that he signed together with this individual is enough indication that he's saying that this other guy is okay. The Bavli believes you have to be second in order for that to be any indication of what you think of the Kuti. Tosafot here asks a great question, and he says, well, now it turns out that this get is riding on one aid. There aren't two aidim to this get. The one aid will make the whole get kasher, which is the second signatory to the get. The Israel is now telling us not only is the get kasher, but he's validating the first aid, and therefore, on his word, everything rides. And that means that you have one aid basically being makshir the entire document, and not two Eidim. Tosafot answers that that's not necessarily the case, because inherently the Eid Kuti is kosher midoraita. It's only a din derabbanan that we worry about their trustworthiness, and therefore, because we worry midorabbanan about their trustworthiness, it's overcome by this Israel who's a signatory. But that's all a din derabbanan. Mi'ikar adin midoraita, the first Eid was a kosher Eid, and therefore they really are two Eidim upholding the document. Others simply say that you're a bifurcate the testimony, which is, there are two separate testimonies over here. Israel is testifying as to the validity of the document, and he's also testifying to the status of the Eid Kuti. But the two are not the same Eidut, they're not about the same issue. Then that Eid Kuti comes and signs, and then he opines on the validity of the document. And so therefore you have two Eidim that are signing on the validity of the document, but the Israel is also testifying to another item, which is separate from this, which is that this individual has a good status that has ramifications, not just in this document, but might have ramifications in other places as well. So it's a different testimony, and that's how they deal with it. Or another way to say that is that all the Eid Israel is doing here is making a Gilui Milta on the Eid Kuti. He's not really testifying about the Eid Kuti. And then again, you wouldn't have a problem that one aide is making the determination about this whole document. Now, as to what this gzeirah of kulchem is, which obligates one to have all the signatories together when the get is given, Rashi writes over here, it's based on a Mishnah later on in the Masechta that says, Amar li asara kulchem kitvu get ishti. He says to 10 people, you should write a get to my wife, echad kutev, kulam chotmim. Then one of them writes it, and all 10 of them have to sign on it. V'lo avichat mekulu, they don't all sign on it, have a pasul. Then it would be psul, because the vow was makpid that all 10 of them be involved. So we don't make all 10 of them write it, but we do make all 10 of them sign it. And if all 10 of them don't sign it, it won't be a good get. And so Rashi says, because of that problem later on, in the Masechta, where he says, kulchem, which would demand that all the edim be signatories to the get, we demand then, by all gitin, that all the signatories be there and sign together. What many of the Rishonim point out is, the example that Rashi is using isn't so strong, because over there the only demand is that all the edim, or all those individuals, sign on the get. There's no demand there that they sign on the get together. And so, what's the proof from there that you have to actually sign ze bifnei ze, versus simply that they all have to sign on the document? And therefore, the Ramban and many others suggest to here that the gzeirah is mishum kulchem edim. It's a statement where he says all of you should be witnesses to the get. Then the meaning of kulchem edim is that all of you must be witnesses together. Because everybody agrees in that case, if you say kulchem edim, that they all have to sign at the same time. And therefore the gzeirah was put in place in order to ensure that, in a case where he said kulchem edim, that we sure we get a kosher get. And therefore, even in a default situation, we'll say the all gitim, the edim, have to sign together because of this possible case where it says kulchem edim. Kufa, Amar Rabbi Elazar, lo yichshiru bo ele eid echad kuti bilvad. My kamashmalon. Rabbi Elazar, who's an Amora, says they only allowed one eid kuti bilvad. That's what we quoted before. Amar Rabbi Elazar. Now, there's a Rabbi Elazar in the Tosefta who's the Tana, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. And then you have a Rabbi Elazar, who's an Amora, Talmid Chaver of Rabbi Yochanan. And so we had the Tosefta say something. Then we had Rabbi Elazar say that they only are matir eid echad bekuti. And we brought that as a proof that it's only one eid and not two eidim. The Gemara now goes back. When it says gufa, it means it's going back to investigate something that was brought as an aside in the previous sugya and wants to delve into it. Here we have that statement of the Amora, Rabbi Elazar, that lo yikshir bo eid echad kuti bovad. Gemara says, my kamashmalan. What's he telling us that we don't know from the Mishnah? Tanina, the Mishnah says, Kol get sheyesh alav eid kuti pasul. Eid is in the singular. Gemara says, Imi matnitin ava amino afilu trei nami. From our Mishnah, I would have thought, two also are kshirim. V'hadik tani chad. It says one. How can you say two? Is mishum de mishtarot afilu chad nami lo. It's going to teach you the tzad psul here. That in a shtar, even one eid kuti is problematic. That's why I use one eid here, to tell you the tzad psul. But on the tzad kasher, then even two eidei kutim would be fine on a get, or on a shichrur avadim. Kamash malan, that is not the case. That's where Rabbi Elazar comes to teach us, that the one eid is dafka. Dafka in shtarot, it's a problem, and dafka begitei, nashim, and shichrur avadim, only one eid kuti is allowed. Betrayal. And is it really true that one is okay, not two? Vaktani maset. Ve'viu lifnei rabban gamliel lekfar otonai. Get isha, ve'yu eidave de kutim v'yichshir. Right after that in the Mishnah, it has a case which suggests that you can have two eidim on a get. So actually that would even support this avamina, that the reason it writes one is because of the shtarot, they are pasul with even one eid kuti, but gitei nashim shukavdim are kshirim even with two, and the evidence of that is the incident that's brought afterwards, that Gamaliel says two eidei kutim are fine. Amar Abaye, tznei eido. This is very interesting. Abaye emends the Mishnah and says, don't say eidav in the plural, but rather eido. It's eid in the singular. And then Rabbi Gamliel's case was also a case of one eid, not a case of two eidim. Rav Amar lulam trei. No. It's dafka. The Mishnah says eidav, it means two eidim by Rabbi Gamliel, and both eidim were kutim in the case of Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel, miflag polig. And Rabbi Gamliel argues on the Tana Kama, v'chasurei mechsera. If that's the case, you're missing the transition words in the Mishnah. So that is logical. When you're talking about Mishnayot, that were notes to help somebody memorize that which is there, it doesn't tell you everything explicitly. It gives you headlines. And from the headlines, you can infer that there are differences of opinion over here. So here we have a Mishnah that tells you Tanakama's opinion, brings an incident with Rabban Gamliel. Then Chasuri Mechsera makes somewhat of a sense here. It's missing the transition phrase. Now the transition phrase is something that you would have there if you were writing something in a careful manner that was well written. But here, where you have a Mishnah that is not written in a careful manner, but rather in a note form, it's missing that transition phrase. And that's what Rava is basically saying, is that the transition phrase is missing, and that's Chasurei Mechsera. It's not so far-fetched to say that, which is V'achiktani. Rav Gamliel Machshir Bishnayim, that you can infer from the case law that's brought afterwards, that Rav Gamliel's opinion is that two are good. And essentially, what is written between the Tanakama statement and the bringing of that case is, Rav Gamliel Machshir Bishnayim, he says not only by one, but also by two. And then it continues with the case law, which corroborates that view of Rabban Gamliel. And so that's how Rava says it. Abaye says again that there's a mistake in the Mishnah, which is equally plausible, that the Mishnah, when it was brought down, instead of being saying Edav, really said Edo, and it was confusion, and it was passed on as Edav. Rava says no, that the Mishnah is right, it's just missing that transition phrase. And now, based on what you know in the Mishnah, we're going to assume there was that transition phrase there, and you have to amend the Mishnah to have that transition phrase. All right, next Mishnah. Again, a Mishnah that we bumped into yesterday. Kol ha'shtarot olim be'erkaot shel ovdei kochavim, af al pi shechut mehem ovdei kochavim ksherim. That any documents that go through the secular court system, and they have signatories that are not Jewish, they are ksherim. Chutz, with the exception of Yitein Hashim Shechoy Avadim, with the exception of bills of divorce, the documents of emancipation. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Afeilu Ksherim. Even these documents, meaning Yitein Hashim Shechoy Avadim are Ksherim, those Guru Elishman Shinasu Be'ejot. The only problem is that when they're done with lay people, not when they're done in the court system. So the question as to Rabbi Shimon's opinion is, how does he get a get Isha to be Ksheira, or does he get Shechoy Avadim to be Ksherim, when you require people who are bnei kritut, people who are relevant to the topic of kiddushin and gerushin, and that's just not true with non-Jewish signatories. If that's the case, how does Rabbi Shimon overcome that deficit? It's clear that he does. How he does it, that we'll see in the Gemara tomorrow. Now, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, what's not clear in the Mishnah is the distinction that the Mishnah is making. Is the Mishnah simply saying that there are shtarot, and those shtarot are ksherim in the secular courts? Gitei nashim v'shechrei avadim are not ksherim in the secular courts. What does that mean? Because there are a bunch of other documents that sit between these two categories. Yeah, for instance, shtar matana, shtar halva'a, shtar mecher, which seemingly is what the shtarot that we're speaking about here. Those other contracts, where do they fall into line? So the basic distinction that you would like to make, and most of the Rishonim make, is that the items that are written in the Mishnah are simply examples. They are not particularly these items, but rather examples of different types of shtarot, which is the shtarot in the beginning of the Mishnah are what are called shtarot raya, where the document is simply evidence of a kinyan that took place. And that's what the Mishnah is saying, that those documents are ksherim when they go through the secular court system, or even when they're signed by non-Jewish edim. Gitei Nashim and Shechriya Vadim are documents who generate the core kinyan over here, kritut, between the parties. Meaning that the edim on these documents are actually the edei kiyum. And that's why they're psalim in the erkaot, or with non-Jewish signatories. So that's what the difference between them is, and they are general categories. Shtarei Raya will be fine. Shtarei kiyum will not be fine. And that's one way to read it, and that would be probably the most appealing way to read the Mishnah, because then it gives you an answer as to any shtar. You just have to ask the question, is it a shtar kiyum, or is it a shtar raya? And that explanation makes more sense, because sometimes shtari mecher act like shtari matana, and sometimes shtari matana act like shtari mecher, which is shtar matana sometimes can be the raya, and sometimes the shtar mecher can be the actual kinyan. And so it seems the differentiation in the Mishnah is not about the particular shtar, but about the type of shtar, whether it's a shtar raya or shtar kiyum. On the other hand, if you look in the Rambam, the Perush Mishnayot, he has a lot of qualifications. Here he says, Ve'erkaot shovdei kochavim, hei mamadot dayanehem. These are their courts or their court systems. Tzomelamaz, v'zeshiyah zeh shtar kvar nitkayim, v'mada shofet. It was done in front of a judge. Bagadat Eidim Edutam Etzlo, with the testimony of the Eidim in front of him. Vihikirotam, and the judge knows them. Aunat Sheet Persem Eitel Israel. Sheilu Eidim Vezeh Shofet Lo Mekabel Shochada. That these people are trustworthy. This judge, these Eidim, do not accept bribery, and therefore they're trustworthy. And then in the shtar it says that they saw the giving of the money. That is only true in transactional documents where there's a purchase. So anything that is a maaseh beitin, like gitei nashim shofrei avadim, vehodaah, vehachasha, admissions, or denials, they have no right in this at all. So over here, the Rambam seems to say that it's very particular to Mekach Umemkar. From the Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayot, it seems the Rambam limits this to Shtari Mecher and Shtari Halva'ah, where they're witnessing an action that took place. Other than Shtari Hoda'ah and Shtari HaChashav, which also are documents of Ra'aya or evidence, nevertheless, since there's no maaseh, there's no action involved, the Rambam does not consider them to be covered by this erkot shel goyim and shtarei raya, and considers them to be invalid. So you could envision, even according to the Rambam, that only shtarei mecher would be mutarim, and even shtar matana, even shtar halva'ah would be problematic. Even though they are shtarei raya, nevertheless, they will not work, and they are no good. So the Rambam sees this as being something that is particular to Mekach Umemkar, and that's it. Now, given what we know from yesterday's daf, that the validity of the contracts in the Erkaot, at least according to the Tosafot, is only a din derabonah, it's a takana derabanan. According to Rashi, we saw yesterday that they are ksherim doraita, whereas according to the Balei Tosafot, they're only ksherim mid derabanan, or it's a takana derabanan. Then it's understandable. What the Rambam is saying is, this takana derabanan was only put in place for shtarei Mekach Umemkar, for transactional documents where it was important for business reasons to have such an ability to use these shtarot, the shtarei raya. But in other areas, maybe not. The Balei Tosafot and others believe that it applies even to shtarei halva'ah. It was to keep liquidity open in the market, as Tosafot said yesterday. And that's true not only in transactions, but we want liquidity in for borrowers, and we want creditors to be able to collect. And therefore, it's important that these documents also be valid in that area. And so that might be the difference between the Rambam and the Balei Tosafot. Or it might be that the Rambam believes that the nature of a shtar raya by Mekach Umemkar is very different than the shtar raya by Halva'ah and Hoda'ah. And therefore, he's only willing to say that the erkot work by Mekach Umemkar. He's not willing to say that by Halva'ah and Hoda'ah. But just to note that the Rambam has a slightly more narrow view of what the Mishnah is speaking about. Now, the Gemara says, Kaposik Vitani. The Mishnah, as we just noted, makes no indication as to which starot it's speaking about. It just says it definitively. Loshna mecher, loshna matana. Making no distinction between a document of purchase versus a document of gifting. Bishlama mecher, michiyav zuze kamayu, huldekana, bishtar rayav almo. So the Gemara says what we were mentioning before, that when it comes to a transactional document, the kinyan is done through the giving of the money, which purchases the object. The kinyan is a kinyan kesef, and as a kinyan kesef, the kinyan's done. All the shtar is doing is evidencing the fact that the kinyan took place. And our belief is that had he not given money, had they not acquired this through a proper kinyan, that these individuals would not cast aspersions about themselves or perjure themselves by saying that this transaction took place when it certainly didn't take place. So this is the aspect of trust over here, which is that because it's going through a court system that is set up, that court system is a reliable system. And that reliable system is that the people there want a certain standing of believability and authority. And that's only true if you believe that the people that are there are doing things that are impartial and correct. If people believe that they can be bribed or they will lie, then there's no status or stature to this court. And because they are trying to maintain a certain semblance of rule of law, then we can trust them if that's the way that these courts conduct themselves, like what the Rambam said before. If we know that's the way that they conduct themselves. So if that's the case, the reason they signed on this document is because they witnessed the fact that there was a transaction. They wouldn't sign on a document evidencing something that didn't take place, because that would undermine their reliability or their believability. Ela b'matana b'may kakani. How do you acquire a matana, a gift? How is a gift given? Lav b'hai shtara. Isn't it through the document? The gift is given through the document itself, through the shtar itself. Person is gifting something to someone else. They could give it through a direct kinyan. They can hand it to them. But more likely, they give a document which gifts the property to the individual. And if that's the case, b'hai shtara chaspa b'almahu. Then in that case, this shtar is no better than a shard of pottery. Which means that the shtar matana here is effectuating the kinyan. And in effectuating the kinyan, you need people who are parties to the kinyan, who are shayach to these dinim. And a shtar matana is not going to work unless you have edim ksherim. And so therefore, you have a problem over here, which is that the Mishnah uses the generic term shtarot. Then that is true both by shtari mecher and shtari matana. But we know that shtari mecher and matana are very different types of shtarot. One is a shtar kiyum, and one is a shtar raya. Matana is a shtar kiyum, mecher chomemkar is a shtar raya. Even though sometimes in mecher mecher, shtar could be the shtar kiyum as well. We're assuming here that it's most cases it's a shtar raya. It's just evidencing the kinyan. So then how do we deal with that? So Amar Shmuel, dina d'machuta dina. Shmuel says, we overcome the problem because of Dina Machuta Dina, which is basically the law of the land governs. And since the law of the land governs, therefore it's considered to be a good gift, even though technically it's not a good gift. I mean, in terms of the shtar itself, the shtar is worthless. The shtar does not generate the kinyan. On the other hand, the Dina de Machuta Dina is that once you've gifted something to a shtar, you can't back out of it. And so that will be binding. Why it's binding? There are two major views within the Rishonim on how Dina de Machuta Dina works. Either it's a social contract between all the parties in that society, and if you live in that society, you're a part of that social contract, which is, these are the laws by which everybody in this society abides by. And because of that social contract, everybody will act in this same manner, and then before we can enforce it because of that social contract. The other possibility of Dina de Machuta Dina is brought by the Ran, which is the idea that the king or the government has a right of eminent domain. And since they can confiscate any property, and they own the land, they can do as they please with the land. And if the king or the government determines that these are the laws of the land, it's basically the equivalent of them confiscating the property and giving it to the other party, because they could do that. Since they could do that, if you have a law that says that that's the case, basically effectively does what they could have done. Interesting nafkamina here, which the Ran brings in the Masechet Nedarim. It's a very interesting and difficult Ran. Ran says that Dina de Machuta Dina only applies outside of Eretz Yisrael, not in Eretz Yisrael. The Ran says that because outside of Eretz Yisrael, you can have ownership over the property, meaning the king or the government has eminent domain. And therefore, they can make determinations about who lives here, who doesn't live here, whose property it is, whose property it isn't. In Eretz Yisrael, he says, Eretz Yisrael is the Yerusha of Kol Yisrael. It is the inheritance of all of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, no person can kick you off, basically, your own land. And because of that, he says then, Dina de Machuta Dina doesn't work inside of Eretz Yisrael. A number of assumptions there in the Ran's opinion, but it's both an interesting and has a huge ramifications, this view of the Ran with regards to Dina de Machuta Dina inside of Eretz Yisrael. That sheet of the Ran actually might be hinted to by Rashi over here when it says Dina de Machuta Shalov de Kochavim. Rashi says that the Dina de Machuta Shalov de Kochavim is binding. Now that Rashi, you can read in one of two ways. He's saying that Dina de Machuta works even by Shalov de Kochavim, meaning of course it works by Yisrael, but even works by Ovdei Kochavim, and that might be why he wrote it. Or, the Rashi might be writing that in the vein of the Ran, which is, Dina Machuta is a din by Ovdei Kochavim, and not necessarily by a Jewish king in the land of Israel. So Dina de Machuta Dina, what Shmuel says, overcomes the deficit in the contract. Right, in Okanami, the contract is no good, but it's overcome by the fact that you have Dina de Machuta Dina. Now, what's interesting here is that works well for the Balei HaTosafot. The Balei HaTosafot think that as far as Edim are concerned, non-Jewish Edim are not Kshirim at all. They're not relevant in these contracts. And the whole concept of Erekat Shol Ovdei Kochavim only works because of a Takana de Rabbanan. If it's a Takana de Rabbanan, then fine. So none of these contracts are good. And just a question of what vehicle you're using in order to make these contracts valid. According to Rashi, who says that the edim on these documents are edim kshirim. That's what Rashi said before, that edim in the Arkoch of the Kuchavim are edim kshirim deoraita. Meaning because they're shayach bidinim. By Gitei Nashim and Shekriya Badim, they're not shayach bekritut. But they are shayach bidinim, and since they're shayach bidinim, then over here also it should work. Why aren't these edim kshirim, even if they are edim to the kinyan or to the kiyum of the kinyan? So you have to answer in one of two ways. You either have to suggest over here that the edim akum are subject to different dinim. The dinim of the akum and the dinim of Israel are two separate bodies of law. And just because they're relevant within the world of dinim, doesn't mean they're irrelevant within the world of dinim of Israel. And therefore they can't act as an aid on a shtar kiyum. On a shtar raya, fine, but on a shtar kiyum, where the shtar itself is the kinyan, we're not going to allow them to be there because their world of dinim is separate from the world of dinim of Israel, and therefore they can't, with the reidut, create a shtar kiyum. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that their problem here is not the problem of dinim, but a problem of reidut. They can't be edim, which is that as far as signing on a document, which is a shtar raya, over there they're really not acting as edim in the sense of edut, of testimony. They're simply giving us validity to the document, to something else that took place. And that is an affirmation of something else that took place. That type of edut is not, we'll call it real edut, because it's not about a testimony about the actual maaseh, it's just evidence of a maaseh that took place. They are not the ones who are mekayim. They're not the ones who generate the issue. On the other hand, when it comes to edut, about a kiyum, that might be a real form of edut. And that real form of edut, they are not in the world of edut. And that's why they're not successful by matana. The last way to express it is that edut can be done ayidei aktav. But that heter to do edut abei aktav, to create an edei kiyum, is only granted to Israel. It's not granted to the akum. And that's why they can't do it here by the shtar matana. So even though Rashi believes that when it comes to edim by erkoch goyim, it's kosher midoraita on these documents, it's only in that limited scope of mekach u'memkar. By matana, that will not be the case, and because of the reason that we stated now, and that only is overcome by the din of dina de malchuta dina. Tosafot says something similar over here in the name of the Ri, which is that when we are posel a shtar matana over here, is pasul, that's even if we believe that a shtar matana could be kasher just with edei chatemya on it. It says, Vafilum ne'amar, shtar matana shechatemo bo Israel, shtar matana that has only Jewish signatories, kasher likno bo b'lo edei misira, it works even without edei misira. Back on Daf Dalid, Tosafot suggested possibly that there'll be a difference between shtari mekach chumemkar and shtari matana in this area of whether you need edei misira or not. So he says, even if you entertain the possibility, like the Rif, that you don't need edei misira by a shtar matana, then nevertheless it still will be problematic if you have non-Jewish signatories to it. Abal b'shtar shechotmim b'ovdei kuchavim, shem b'lo edei misira, v'lo edei chatima, k'sherim la'id. You don't have here edei misira. You don't have edim who sign it, who are k'sherim to testify. V'lo hadad b'al din. And you don't have an admission of one of the parties, lo chashuv shtar deknota yado, then that shtar is not going to be a valid shtar midoraita. And that's why we have to evoke other principles to make this shtar matana effective. The Gemara says, vi baitema, tnei chutz migidei nashim. Here, there is a split in the Rishonim as to whether the I baitema is a completely different answer or it builds on the previous answer. So do we say dina machuta dina? And in addition, it says tnei chutz mikigidei nashim. When it says over here gidei nashim, it doesn't mean gidei nashim, but ke gidei nashim with the kaf ha-dimyon. It's not only bills of divorce and documents of emancipation, but anything that's similar to them. What does that mean, similar to them? Similar to them means anything that is a kiyum, a shtar kiyum, and not a shtar raya. And so then, what the answer would be is, everything is included under Gitei Nashim because they are Shtarei Kiyum. Ah, why does Matana work anyway? Dina de Machuta Dina. And therefore the second answer here is incorporating the first answer of Dina Machuta Dina, is basically saying that Shtarei Raya Dina Machuta Dina covers. Shtarei Matana Alastam were going to be considered problematic because they are shtarei kiyum. On the other hand, if dina v'achuta dina can overcome that problem, that's only if the court system is really a government office or run by the government itself. So if the courts have the status of governmental courts, then dina v'achuta dina, and then the court's action can help you even with shtarei kiyum. On the other hand, if the court system is a judicial system, but not necessarily a governmental system, then in that situation, you could not overcome the problem of shtarei kiyum being problematic in this instance. And of course, even if you say dina d'machuta dina, that cannot overcome the problem of gitei nashim and shechrei abadim that require bnei kritut. They require individuals who are shayach and relevant in kiddushin and gerushin in order to be signatories to the document or edei misira in the document, or because the akum is not a ben shaliach, or he can't do lishma. We saw that in yesterday's daf, all the deficits that are possible by a non-Jewish aid, that makes it that even if you say dina machuta dina, that won't help you overcome the problem of gidei nashim shechrei abadim, and those will remain psulim no matter what if you have the non-Jewish aidim signed on them. Or, this is a completely different answer, which is, they don't accept dina machuta dina over there. Dina machuta dina doesn't work by shtarei matana. Dina de machuta is only strong enough when you're dealing with shtarei raya, but it's not strong enough to move property from one person to the other. And by shtarei kiyum, dina machuta is not sufficient grounds, and that's why the Baitema says this is an alternate answer, which says that it doesn't work. And the answer here is ki gitei nashim, that shtarei matana are not ksherim, and they don't work. And dina machuta dina cannot overcome that problem, because they can overcome issues by mekach umemkar, where there's an agreed upon transaction, there are two parties and there's a kinyan there, then dina de machuta maybe can govern. But here, by where there's a shtar matana, where there's only one party giving and there's no kinyan in the back end anyway, there's never been an acceptance, there dina machuta dina can't come along and do anything about it. So that's the possibility that they're actually two different dinim completely over here. Rashi asks, why is the Gemara having so much trouble over here? The Gemara answered the question yesterday. Gemara said yesterday, I'll tell you what the answer to the question is. This is Aliba de Rabbi Elazar, that the Edei Misira were Yisrael. And therefore the Shtar is a good Shtar, because they were Edei Misira over here. And the author of this Mishnah is Rabbi Elazar. The Gemara said, well, if Rabbi Elazar is the author of the Mishnah, don't we have a problem? Because the upcoming Gemara is about to say that Rabbi Shimon must subscribe to the position of Rabbi Elazar, because he is even Machshir Gitei Nashim and Shechrei Avadim in the non-Jewish courts. It's clear there that you can't work unless you're using Edei Misira. So Rabbi Shimon is definitely subscribed to Rabbi Elazar. The Gemara says the Tanna Kamma also subscribes to Rabbi Elazar. The Gemara said, well, if that's the case, you have a problem here, because it seems like that's exactly what they're arguing about. The Gemara says, no, the nafkamina between them, ikabeinayush shemot hamuf hakim. It's when the names are clearly non-Jewish names, that was the difference in the opinion between the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says they're clearly non-Jewish names, it's fine. Whereas the Tanna Kamma says, either if they're clearly non-Jewish names, we worry about the mix-up from this, that we'll make them into Edei Misira, and we won't allow you to do it. So now, Rashi says, why didn't the Gemara give that answer here? Rashi says that's because that was a Shinuya Dechika. That was a difficult answer that the Gemara was in a bind and used it yesterday, because it was in a bind, it was up against the wall, and it uses it. But that's not really a good answer, and therefore the Gemara wanted an alternative answer over here. Rashi himself basically says that in his interpretation yesterday about where Erkaot are good is because he says because of Dina de Machuta Dina. Rashi basically bases it on the conclusion of the Gemara here and does not base it on the conclusion of yesterday's Gemara. Many of the Rishonim, including Tosfot over here, say, what are you talking about? That's not true. The Gemara Lamaskana accepts that reason. And the Gemara goes on to say that that's the reason for the list of why these are comparable issues of Gitei Nashim Shechrei Abadim. The list is governed by this principle of Edei Misira Karte. And the Gemara does accept it in the end. Well, then you have a bigger problem now. If the Gemara does accept it in the end, then why doesn't the Gemara give that as the answer over here? Tosfot, on the other hand, says that the same Zerah that the Gemara speaks about, that when you have Edei Misira, despite the fact that you have non-Jewish names that are obvious in the document, it still is pasul, because Otu Shemot She'enam Uvhakim, because of names that are not clear. And then names that are not clear, we worry about the fact that either according to Rashi, it's Mizuyaf Mitocho, according to the Baliat Tosafot, the other Rishonim, it's a problem that they might come to be used as Edei Misira. And just like we have that gzeirah that invalidates the document by a get, that same gzeirah is applicable by matana. Because just like by get, the ishtar is a shtar kiyum, so too by the matana, the ishtar is a shtar kiyum. And because of that, that same gzeirah is applicable, and therefore we would have assumed that there's a problem. How is that problem overcome? That is through the answers that we're giving here of Dina de Machuta Dina, or possibly the second answer, which is that it's not overcome here, and it remains a problem because it is a shtar kiyum. All right, we'll stop here by the two dots on the bottom of Yud Amud Bet.